It was the best of times. The digital economy's birth, coinciding with the birth of a new century, offered hope for a new epoch of invention, creativity, and economic success.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these snakes on this plane! Everybody strap in!
It was the worst of times. Snakes on a plane, the mediocrity blockbuster formula that eventually brought us films like Sharknado. And in this worst of times intellectual future, there would be no need to burn books. Nobody would even remember what they were.
We'll take these books.
Okay. You're going to come back, aren't you?
Of course.
Books, what are those? In the future, they'll be called landfill. It was a time of mind-bending musical success. It was a time of Napster, a formula that eventually brought us free streaming music. The spokesman for creativity itself back in 2000, Lars Ulrich of Metallica, tried to block that digital train hurtling down the tracks.
We should decide what happens to our music, not a company with no rights in our recordings, which has never invested a penny in our music or had anything to do with its creation. The choice has been taken away from us.
But writer Stephen Johnston says these are the good times for the creative classes. He lays out his research in The Creative Apocalypse That Wasn't in this week's New York Times Magazine. Artists, he says, just have to work harder in this digital age. Anyone got a problem with that?
It looks as though there are slightly more musicians than there were in 1999, many more self-employed musicians, and they are making, on average, slightly more money than they did before. And it doesn't seem to be that the superstars are driving up the average. If you look at the kind of megastar musicians, they're making about the same, adjusted for inflation, of course, as their, you know, equivalents were 15 or 20 years ago. So it seems as though the average musician is doing okay. And for whatever reason, there seem to be more musicians than there were 15 or 16 years ago.
So Taylor Swift is doing better, and Tyler Smith is also doing quite well.
Yeah, and again, there are individual stories in there. There are musicians who are not doing as well. The economics of the whole thing has changed. Clearly, musicians are making less money from recordings, but they seem to be making, one, a little bit more money from live music. Live music ticket prices have gone up, you know, dramatically. They've actually gone up faster, more dramatically than the prices of recorded music have dropped, which is kind of interesting. And there's also a kind of a diversifying of potential revenue streams for musicians. There's a whole host of revenue streams that just weren't around 15 or 20 years ago. So for instance, like licensing your music to TV shows or video games, that's a big business now. It basically didn't exist 20 years ago. And the other thing that's really important here, and we ignore this a lot, is all the technological factors that made it easy to pirate music make it much easier and cheaper to record music. And so it is much cheaper to record and distribute an album now than it was 15 or 20 years ago. It was hard to actually get an album recorded and get it in circulation and get it internationally distributed. Took a big label.
So if you're on a label, it's easier for you to get ripped off. But if you want to create your own label and self-publish, that's easier to do than ever.
Right, exactly. The other thing that's interesting here is to look at it next to books, because we all know that the traditional, you know, record store, the kind of Tower Records or, you know, the indie record store with, you know, all those vinyl albums, that, you know, that has largely withered away. And
you know what? My 17-year-old's birthday is today. You know what she wants?
A vinyl album record player.
A turntable, that's right.
Anyway, it's coming back. It's crazy, kids.
It's crazy.
Anyway,
yeah.
But a lot of us thought that the same thing was going to happen to bookstores, right? That the classic indie bookstore in the downtown area that was going to get replaced by people downloading Kindle books on their iPad or on their Kindles. And in fact, that hasn't happened at all. And the indie bookstores are doing really well. In fact, a lot of people in that community say that last year was the best year they've ever had, and they're growing in number, not declining in number. And I think that's because just as the live music business has, you know, thrived over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, the same thing is happening with indie bookstores. In a sense, if you want community around music, you don't necessarily go to a store and buy CDs, you go to a show. If you want community around books, you go to that indie bookstore and you go to a reading or you go talk to people in the bookstore. That's where the kind of community experience of books is.
Thinking about the writer model there, can you imagine Hemingway having to blog?
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is a legitimate concern for the writing side, although the publishing business is not, you know, it's not having the kind of crisis that the recorded music business has had. But yeah, the kind of the solitary writer who wants to, you know, sit around and work on his or her, you know, masterpiece for 8 years and then release it and then be ignored. I mean, in a way, Hemingway at least courted publicity for a lot of his career. It's more Faulkner, right, who just really wanted to not exist as anything other than just his books. That role is a little bit harder to imagine. And probably if that role, you know, if we have fewer Faulkners, that's probably a loss.
What about movies?
Well, the argument that people have been making about movies is that the classic mid-budget artistic picture for adults has kind of dropped off the map, and that Hollywood has gotten, you know, just obsessed with making, you know, sequels of sequels and comic book hero movies and, you know, vampire movies. On the one hand, I think that's one place where the data supports the critics in the sense that Hollywood itself, the big Hollywood studios, something like 70% of all the movies made last year, they were top grossing movies from Hollywood, were in that category. They were either, you know, superhero franchises or, you know, movies targeted at teenagers. And so that kind of the classic Hollywood of the 70s and early 80s seems to have withered away. But in its place, interestingly, is this kind of new category of kind of the major, I was calling them in the piece, the major indies, often funded by kind of wealthy individuals from outside the kind of the film business. And they have funded a lot of great pictures that have done very well at the box office in recent years, The 12 Years a Slave and Her and The Wolf of Wall Street and so on. And so I looked again kind of statistically at this and looked at the most highly rated kind of movies in this by critics in this category and looked at how they did at the box office compared to movies in 99 and 2000 and 2001. And basically it's almost exactly the same. If you make a critically acclaimed kind of mid-budget picture, you'll make about $50 million at the U.S. box office. And that was almost exactly the same in adjusted dollars in 99 and 2000.
Huh. And I guess, you know, there's a model for that. I mean, there were, you know, rich patrons of the arts back in the old days who would support painters, who would support, you know, Mozart, who would support Haydn, you know, to do symphonies and things that just weren't able to be done in one's own studio. And maybe the movies have become a little bit like that.
Well, yeah. And the other way in which that tradition is being revived, which is really interesting, of course, is things like Kickstarter and Patreon, where instead of, you know, a single rich patron, you have, you know, 2,000 middle class patrons who each contribute $100 or $500 to or $10 to the album or the movie or the documentary that you're trying to make.
Hey, Mr. Future Dude, you know what we call that here? The pledge drive, okay?
Yeah,
here in public radio, Kickstarter. Whoa, that's really futuristic. We've been doing that for about 60 years, okay?
You are so ahead of the times. I totally agree.
I'm telling you.
You credit there.
There you go. Stephen Johnson is currently the author of The Creative Apocalypse That Wasn't in this week's New York Times Magazine and author most recently of the great book, How We Got to Now, Six Innovations That Made the Modern World. Stephen, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.